Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
If the NBA resumed the season with a limited number of games, Blazers guard Damian Lillard said he isn't playing. The five-time All-Star said he wouldn't play in meaningless games if Portland did not have a true opportunity to make the playoffs. The Blazers are currently 3.5 games behind the A spot. Shannon, is this inbound or out of bounds for him to say?
I think it's out of bounds, and it's a very bad look for Dame. And I like Dame Lillard. I like Dollar a lot, Skip. He's big time. He's clutch. He can make big shots. He's not afraid of the moment. He doesn't back down from anyone. I love what he does in his community. I love how he's like, I'm going to stay in Portland. I'm going to try to build a championship team in Portland. I love what he's done for his community and what his family. But he's wrong on this one, Skip. So you mean to tell me 66 games wasn't an opportunity enough? You played in those games, Dame. You can't say if we don't mathematically have a realistic chance or whatever the phrasing that he used, Skip, is that, hold on. So you're going to practice, but come game time, you're going to sit on the bench. Are you going to collect that check? So do they get to withhold the check? Because if they do, I'm sure that'd be a fair trade-off. But I just, it's a bad look for him to say, well, unless we have a mathematic chance. And I understand, you know, just reading some of the scenarios, Skip, I think the NBA has a 70 game to be able to fulfill their regional obligation with the amount of games they put on. So we don't know if they're going to play the last 15 to 20 ball games, or they play 4 or 5 to fulfill their obligation and then go into this 1 through 16 or however they're going to do it. Somebody's going to be disappointed no matter how it shapes out, Skip. But sometimes we're in an unprecedented situation. You have to do unprecedented things to get out of that situation. But I think this is a bad look for Dame. It sends a very, very bad message. You can't have your star players that are on good teams that likely might miss the playoffs saying, well, if we don't have a realistic chance to make it, I'm not going to play. Well, you had 66 games to be in a better position than what you're in. So I think it sends a bad message, and I'm going to disagree with Dame on this one.
I'm going to agree with you, but for a different reason than you just gave.
Okay.
I also like Damian a lot. I like him on the court. I like him off the court. Like everything he's done on and off. Get all that. But I do not love this. Seems like fairly routinely, Damian Lillard suddenly speaks out as if he's Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or even LeBron James. like he's a superstar. And I keep asking myself, when exactly did Dame Dollar become that guy? To be able to speak out the way he speaks out. Because we saw him, it seems like ages ago, but just the last time the NBA had playoffs, a year ago, they did make it to the conference final against Golden State. And all I know is in 4 straight fourth quarters, Dame Dollar was Dame Nickel. I mean, he just shrank. He disappeared. I look at the numbers in 4 straight fourth quarters against Golden State, and they had chances in those games.
Oh, they
he went
big leads,
7
yeah.
of 23. Yeah, he went 7 of 23 in those 4 fourth quarters combined. So he only made 7 shots in 4 fourth quarters. That's 30%. He made 5 of 16 three-point attempts, so he made 5 threes in 4 fourth quarters. That's 31%. And his plus minus for the 4 fourth quarters was minus 28. So, Dame, what have you done? Show me the credentials whereby you can say, I'm above that. That's beneath me. I can't. You know, look, Shannon, if Damian had spoken out and said, I just don't think it's safe enough. I don't want to get sick. You got me.
Exactly.
But that's not what
yes.
he was talking
yes.
about.
Yes.
No,
yes.
He's
yes.
talking about it's beneath me. I'm this guy, and you can't ask me to go to wherever, Orlando, Disney World, wherever it's going to be. You can't make me go there with my team and actually play basketball for nothing. Well, Damian, it's potentially not for nothing. It is because you do earn, as Shannon pointed out, you earn a real sweet check. And you're your regional TV market is very important to your ownership. So, again, those people are going to be on their edge of their seats because you got Nurkic back. You got Zach Collins back. Let's say you play, I don't know, 10 more games. What if you won 8 of them against high-level competition? What if you could use that as a launching pad, springboard into next year? I don't know. It could happen.
Right.
Where everybody look back on those 10 games you played for nothing, quote unquote, and with Nurkic and with Zach Collins, all of a sudden everything clicked, and you said, look out, here we come next year. Well, so you say, I want to be with my team. I'll go sit on the bench, but it's beneath my dignity to actually walk on the floor and play basketball. That's just wrong. I'm with Shannon on this one. Shannon, you can't say that publicly when this league is teetering right now. And there's so much money that's already been lost and so much sort of goodwill and credibility. And we're all teetering, man. Damian, we're all teetering.
Right.
We're you know, everybody. At FS1, it's tough right now. It's tough for baseball.
Very.
It's tough for the NFL. It's time to do your part and don't try to knock down the process and pull everybody back down into your sort of egomaniacal view of I'm Dame Dollar. I mean, seriously, Shannon, in the end, I know this is going to come off as harsh, but there are times I think Damian is a better rapper than he is a fourth quarter player in big game, in the biggest games, because he is really good. He's the best athlete rapper I've ever heard. I give you that. But does that qualify you as a Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James? No, it does not. So it was a little offensive to me to hear these comments.
I agree with you, Skip. And just because you're a big player in the league and you have a platform, that doesn't mean you should stand up and voice everything. That some things, Skip, you just keep to yourself. Man, I really don't want to play. I don't feel like it, but I'm going to go out here and give it my... You're saying this to yourself. But for him to verbalize that public, Skip, as you said, if he has an underlying condition, I think if I'm not mistaken, Larry Nance Jr. says, I'm concerned, but he has an underlying condition. There is cause for concern. Yes. But to say, because I'm not going to come out here and play in no meaningless games, you played 66 meaningful games that you turned into meaningless games by the way your team played. Now, all of a sudden, we've been out of commission for 8, 9, 10 weeks. They're trying to scramble to start America back. And you're like, nah, I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll practice and I come sit with them on the bench, but I'm not playing. Like, I'm too good for that. Huh? When?
Yeah. Okay.
What? He got to take... What them 10 rings that he got? He must be Bill Russell.
No. So, Shannon, final point, just in fairness, just for the record, Damian also said if they do have a chance to play their way into a postseason tournament, whatever that would be, he was all in on that. And he said, we might have a chance with Nurkic and Zach Collins back to go steal some you-know-what, meaning we might just find ourselves in the conference finals and be able to beat somebody who's not ready to beat us because of the short time to get ready for this however abbreviated tournament they would have. Okay, that's good. Love that. Just in fairness. Yep, go ahead.
But you do understand they have a short time to get prepared with Zach Collins and Nurkic also. They make it seem like they've been preparing with these guys for the whole year, and they're just going to spring this trap on everybody else. You got to get used to playing with those guys also because you've been playing a different brand of basketball without a true low-post player. So now, so what are you going to start? Nurkic and Whiteside with you, Melo, and CJ? So it's going to take you guys some time to get used to that. But, Dane, you don't get to set how the NBA is going to come back. You are a player.
No.
Yes. Commissioner Silver, Adam Silver will ask his superstars their input. But for you to say, I'll play, if it's 7-12 match, you know, you got to play your way in, I'm down for that. But if I got to come back and play and the games are meaningless, there are no meaningless games. You don't know how many more of these things you got. Treasure every last one of them, Dane. Treasure every last one of them.
Got it.
I think you're an unbelievable player.
Well said.
But I'm going to disagree. You're wrong on this one, bro.
Good points, guys. Good points. We have some new Michael Jordan news to talk about. New audio. Did it reveal that MJ lied about how the dream team was constructed? No. Yeah, Shannon, you're listening up. We'll go there next. During the Last Dance documentary, Michael Jordan denied the rumor that he had kept Isaiah Thomas off the dream team. But audio has now come out of Jordan telling NBA reporter Jack McCallum that he wouldn't play if Isaiah was on the team. So, Shannon, what do you make of this?
What? Jared, I know he didn't say that. Now, either am I supposed to believe Michael Jordan or my lying ears? Now, he sat up there and cried and talked about, you know, if you don't want to play this way, I pushed and I dragged guys. You lied. And I told Skip Bayless you were lying. And I told Skip Bayless Rod Thorne sit up there and told a bold-faced lie. I said, Skip, if he didn't explicitly say, he implicitly implied it. Come to find out, he said it. This is a quote from Michael Jordan. Rod Thorne called me. I said, Rod, I won't play if Isaiah Thomas is on the team. He assured me. He said, you know what? Chuck doesn't want Isaiah, so Isaiah is not going to be a part of the team. They didn't ask him about Chuck. They didn't ask him about Patrick Ewing. They didn't ask him about Stockton, Malone, or Chuck. They didn't ask him. They said, did you? He said, no. Come to find out, he lied. And you know what, Skip? Michael Jordan was the only guy that mattered. You know that. So in other words, he did keep Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah Thomas should have the vitriol and the dislike for Michael Jordan, not Michael Jordan for Isaiah. You kept this man. You kept this man with a blank on his resume because he would have made the 8 Olympic team, Skip. They got boycotted. They went to Moscow. So he potentially could have had a gold medal. You kept this man off that team, Mike. So now, Skip, you know when you utter one lie, I get to call into question everything else you've ever uttered. Because when do I know that you're telling the truth? Now, we know he'll lie. We know he dry snitched. Talk about guys up in their room with girls and all that other stuff. Ain't nobody ask you all that. No comment. Oh, dry snitching, lying Mike.
So, are you suggesting that this proves it once and for all that LeBron is the GOAT? Is this what you're reaching for? Thread that you're hanging your argument on?
No.
It's a tiny little thread. The Isaiah thread is why you're saying LeBron is the GOAT and not Jordan?
No. No, I just want you to admit. I want you to admit publicly for all our 20 million fans to say Michael Jordan lied and you were wrong that he did keep Isaiah off that team. That's all I want. If you do that, that's all I want, Skip Bayless. That's all I want.
There were some semantics going on in the answer Jordan gave on The Last Dance. There was some plausible deniability going on there. But in the end, it really didn't matter exactly what Michael Jordan thought because nobody wanted Isaiah. You keep trying to pin this whole thing on Michael Jordan when you should pin it on the entire team starting with Magic Johnson, who at that point in 1992 had more clout than Michael Jordan did. Allow me, before you go on, to read the quote out of Magic's book. Magic did a book with Jackie McMullen with Larry Bird about when the game was ours. That's the title of the book. And in it, I'm going to read the quote from Magic Johnson about the Isaiah controversy. Isaiah killed his own chances when it came to the Olympics. Nobody on that team wanted to play with him. I'm sad for Isaiah. He has alienated so many people in his life, and he still doesn't get it. This is from Magic Johnson, and he concludes, you should be aware when you've ticked off more than half the NBA. That's his concluding statement about Isaiah Thomas, that you're gnashing teeth over it, that you're having your heart is broken for poor Isaiah, when even the great David Robinson spoke out 2 weeks ago. David Robinson, who never said a cross word about anybody, the admiral, and he just laughed at this whole notion saying, no, We didn't want him because chemistry matters when you're trying to go win the world championship.
Oh, man, stop it. Chemistry wouldn't matter in that
Isaiah
situation.
Isaiah didn't fit in their chemistry. It didn't work. So, let's go to these. Yeah.
Can I ask you one question before you go on?
Yeah, go ahead.
If Michael Jordan says, Rod Thorne, I'm not playing in the Olympics unless Isaiah is on that team, would it have mattered that Charles Barkley, David Robinson, and Magic Johnson, would it have mattered if they say they don't want to play with Isaiah if Jordan says, I'm not playing unless he's on that team? A simple yes or a simple no. I don't need semantics. A simple yes or a simple no. Would it have mattered?
No. I mean, I don't think Magic could have killed the deal. Yeah. Okay. So let's go to this quote. All right. Let's go to what Jordan actually said on The Last Dance about this controversy. He said that Rod Thorne, who, by the way, did draft him when Rod was running the Bulls in 1984.
Yep.
Rod Thorne calls and says, hey, we would love you to play for the Dream Team. And Michael says back to him, who's all playing? And then Michael goes on to say that Rod Thorne answers, what does that mean? I say, who's all playing? He says, well, the guy you're talking about or you're thinking about, he's not going to be playing. So semantics are going on here, plausible deniability. This is on The Last Dance. He's actually telling you that they're talking about Isaiah without talking about Isaiah. Michael's point was the name itself didn't actually need to be brought up because everybody knew who they were talking about. Nobody on
that's
the team
not what
wanted
he said
Isaiah.
To Jack, Skip, that's okay. not what he said but to Jack he, McCallum.
Okay.
That's not what he said.
Okay, but he says in those lost tapes, Jack McCallum, longtime friend of mine, great reporter, I buy this 1,000%. Yeah. So Michael's talking off the cuff to Jack McCallum. I think these are like 1992 tapes. I don't know when they're from. Maybe they're just from recently. I'm not sure. But they're older tapes. And the point is, mm-hmm. in the tape, that he says Chuck doesn't want Isaiah. And at first I thought he meant Charles Barkley. He means Chuck Daly, the head coach. So we could even throw the head coach on this list of people on that team and in that selection process who did not want Isaiah Thomas. Chuck Daly, no. Magic, no.
I don't believe that, Skip. So now, hold on, wait a minute, Skip. Hold on. I'm not finna let you do that man like this. That man is not here to defend himself. Now, so many times we'll say things that people said that are not here or not in a position to defend themselves. Now you're gonna talk about Chuck Daly. The man had just won Chuck Daly 2 titles, and now Chuck Daly can't stand the man. Chuck Daly doesn't want to coach the man. Y'all need to stop this. Michael Jordan said, I said, Rod, I will not play. I won't play if Isaiah Thomas is on the team. He assured me that Isaiah would not be on that team. So, Skip, stop dealing with semantics. Now, we can deal with semantics and say, you know, Shannon Sharp is a dark complexion fella. I'm black. Ain't no semantics. Call it what it is. I'm a big black guy. Okay. Ain't no dark-skinned fella. I'm black. I'm tired of these semantics, get it? Skip Bayless, you think you slick. You won't admit it. I need you to...
Black and white. Black and white is nobody on that team wanted Isaiah Thomas. Black and white. That's it. There's no gray area. Nobody on the team wanted him. And by the way, speaking of the great Chuck Daly... All right. Go.
All I'm saying is, Skip, you know the only guy that mattered was Michael. He was the only guy that mattered because guess what, Skip? Nobody else had a gold medal. Mike already had one. He said it. I already had a gold medal from 84. Nobody else on the team had one because after that, Skip, because at 88, David Robinson lost. He got the bronze. Remember, Skip? They got beat. That's what made them start sending the pros to the Olympics. They got the bronze in 88. They boycotted in 80. They won the Olympics in 84 because they was held right here in L.A. 88, they lost in Seoul. 92 in Barcelona. So the only guy that mattered was Michael Jordan. You know it. And he kept that man off it. He got a hole in that man's resume. I hope he sleep good at night. I hope he sleep real good at night, knowing what you did.
Time out. Okay, so they chose as the backup point guard to Magic Johnson, John Stockton. All he did in his career was set unbreakable records for assists and steals. Unbreakable. I don't see how any human will ever eclipse John Stockton's assists and steals. So he's the backup. He soon broke his leg. He healed much quicker than they thought. But the backup to the backup, next in line on the depth chart, was somebody from Detroit not named Isaiah Thomas. It was Joe Dumars. Everybody wrote that the next man up for the backup point guard was Joe Dumars. I've told you from the start, Isaiah was seen as more of a two guard than a point guard. So Joe Dumars was next, but no, he was a two guard masquerading as a point guard. He could distribute pretty well, but what he did best was score the basketball. And in the end, when it came down to the final cut, they announced that it came down to actually a two guard final cut between Clyde Drexler and Isaiah Thomas, two guards. And in the end, they pick Clyde Drexler just because he's taller, longer, a little better defender maybe than Isaiah. But in the end, it's personality. The ultimate bad boy, Piston, was Isaiah. Difficult to get along with. As Magic said, Magic was close friends with Isaiah. Remember, they used to kiss each other before those finals games. And even Magic turned on Isaiah and said, I can't defend him. He's alienated half the league. And he had alienated the whole team in 1992.
You know what I find so funny about this is that Magic and Larry, they didn't say anything about Larry, but Magic and Jordan, the guys that had that ruthless mentality to win at all costs, despised the very guy that would win at all costs. A 6'9", a 6'6" guy despised the 6-foot guy that had the same mentality they had, and they held it against him. That's it, Skip. Was Isaiah the player they were? No, but he had the same mentality they had, and they held that against him.
Wait a second. It's not the same mentality because Isaiah personally offended and alienated people in ways that Jordan and Magic never did. People might have hated Jordan just because he was a ruthless competitor.
I'm talking about winning,
but not because he was a jerk.
I'm talking about winning on the basketball court. Skip, I'm talking about winning on the basketball court. I'm talking about take no prisoners, kiss my butt mentality on the court. Like Jordan had that same mentality with his teammates. So you know what he had against his opponent. You said Magic was ruthless and cutthroat. Isaiah saw that. He saw Magic. He'd been chasing Magic since 1981. And he finally caught up with him. In 1989, he finally caught Magic. And now the very thing Shannon. That Magic had over him was the mentality. And the same thing that Jordan had over basically everybody else, the mentality. Isaiah displayed that, and they held it against him. You can use semantics. You can say nobody liked it. It doesn't matter, Skip. Guess what? I don't care if nobody else is FS1 like me. I just need you to like me. That's all that matters. You, as long as Skip Bayless ride with me, Sharp. I'm good. Damn. That's my dog. I count
I love
on
you,
Skip.
Man.
Skip, you with your boy?
Yeah.
No, Skip, everybody else against you. Skip, are you with your boy?
I am with you. I love you, man, but I'm not going to let you get away from grasping some weak thread to discredit Michael Jeffrey Jordan from being the GOAT that he is. This is
a
semantical, plausible deniability on your part, trying to reach for a little tiny thread to say, see, LeBron is the GOAT. No, he's not.
No, Skip, I told you whatever would come out of this documentary that did not relate to basketball would not change my perception of Michael Jordan. It has not. It will not. So, no, him not telling the truth about Isaiah and keeping him off the team does not change my perception of Mike. It does not. He told
you
the story, though.
You are stubborn over there, Shannon. Jeez.
riled up. I have a feeling, keep the energy for this next one because we got to talk about the Cowboys. Should Dak Prescott have had an even better year last season with more receiver help? We'll dive into that next. Time for a hot topic of the day, sponsored by Burger King. 8 spicy chicken nuggets for just $1. Well, we got to talk about the Cowboys because last season they were tied for last place in the NFL with the most dropped passes by receivers. This included Michael Gallup and Randall Cobb, who finished in the top 10 for most drops. The 3 years prior, Dallas had never been worse than 7th when it came to drops. And I know, Skip, this gave you nightmares, but Shannon, how do you explain it?
Drops are more about concentration. It's more mental than coaching. Sometimes guys will drop passes if they don't get the ball often enough, and then they feel when the ball comes to them, they need to do something with the football in order to validate so the coaches will give them more opportunities. And you see that a lot. You see a lot of guys turn their head, start to run before they secure the ball. So this is not a mental thing. This is not coaching. But I hope we don't think those first two plays that you showed in that package, Jenny, are drops, do we? Are we calling those drops? Because the thing is, what I love when people say, oh, what's the saying? If you get your hands on it, you should have caught it, says the people that never caught a pass. The thing is, Skip, when you look at this, yes, are there passes that should have been caught? Absolutely. But if you go back over the course of the year, there's also passes that were caught that maybe should have been dropped. So you got to factor those in also. It seems to me that everybody just wants to factor in the plays that were not made. But what about the plays that probably shouldn't have been made that were made that goes to winning? You see, this is what gets you guys every year, Skip Bayless. Somebody will come out with stats like this, and it will convince your delusional fans, see, I told you, we should have been 12-4. We should have won the division, and we should have been playing the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Y'all do that every year. You've been doing it for 25 years. Let me know how that worked out for you the next 25 years.
So, I can explain all those drops last year with two words. Jason
what?
And Garrett. Jason Garrett.
All right.
He was responsible. He was the reason for all those drop passes. Shannon Sharp. In the end, it is about not just coaching, but the tone set by your coach. Jason Garrett was Coach Clap, as I nicknamed him. Jason Garrett would watch a big touchdown catch, and he would just keep clapping and butt slapping. And then he'd watch yet another drop, and as the team came off the field, he'd just keep clapping and butt slapping the guy who dropped the pass. Jason Garrett created no urgency, no fear of retribution, no fear of hell to pay if you dropped another pass. There was little to no weekly focus. There was no lock-in. There was zero Jimmy Johnson Memorial fear factor in that locker room. So I told you from the start, Jason Garrett, really good at preparing a football team from Wednesday until through Saturday. On Sunday, he couldn't motivate a rodeo bull in the chute. It was hard to watch because I covered Jimmy Johnson's teams. Jimmy Johnson was hell to pay. If you started dropping balls for Jimmy Johnson, you're going to have a hurricane in your face on the sideline. You're going to stay after practice to run sprints. I don't know. You just might get your butt cut because
yes,
that's the way Jimmy operated, and they knew it. They were scared to death of that man. I used to be in the locker room during media availability at lunchtime, and if that head coach with that hair, if he happened to just wander through the locker room, everybody just stopped talking and shrank back in their lockers and looked sideways like, I hope I didn't do something. I hope it wasn't me. They feared him. They locked in for him. They stayed focused for him. And Jason Garrett created the softest environment in the National Football League. In the end, I just told you a couple of weeks ago, over the last decade, No team in the NFL had more Pro Bowl players than the Dallas Cowboys over the previous 10 years. What? So routinely, including going into last year, I thought Dallas had the most talented team in football. Last year, they were the mentally softest team. I told you Jason Garrett should have been gone long ago. I told you 8 years ago I was calling for his job. He's very good at keeping Jerry Jones happy. That's what he did the best. He'd keep Jerry involved with the game plan. He'd welcome him into team meetings or coach meetings or whatever. Jerry could always be a part of the team because Jason coexisted beautifully with Jerry Jones, who treated him like another son. Jerry, it was hard for Jerry to even let go of Jason in the bitter end until he finally fell in love with Mike McCarthy. So, Shannon, I don't think they'll drop quite as many balls next year because I do think Mike McCarthy's a little tougher coach than Jason Garrett ever thought about being. Again, a lot of people think Mike McCarthy, a tough guy from Pittsburgh. There was one quote in the Bleacher Report article, the big expose about Aaron Rodgers, in which some anonymous source referred to Mike McCarthy as a fake tough guy. And to your point that you keep bringing up, yeah, on Saturdays during walkthroughs, he was often up in his office getting a massage. Maybe that's fake tough guy, but I'll still take him over Jason Garrett. And my final point to you is CeeDee Lamb last year at the University of Oklahoma dropped all of three passes. He will drop no more than three this coming year with the Cowboys because he is a baller. And I believe that will start rubbing off on everybody, starting with Michael Gallup, who, according to The Athletic stats, he led the league in drops last year with 13. That can't fly, man. You're not that good to drop 13 balls, if in fact that's what it was in the end. Everybody has different sort of drop stats that they use. But even Zeke, was his mind all there after he got his money? Zeke dropped six passes last year. He dropped five in his first 3 years. Mental focus, no fear of head coach. Mind not always in the game and on the game. I'm sorry, that's what it was. Jason Garrett.
No, you talk about Jimmy. Because you had one mind, you had one voice emanating from the locker room. You see, you have two voices now, Jason Garrett and you have Jerry Jones. The players are unafraid of Jason Garrett because they know they can go behind Jason Garrett's back and go to Jerry Jones. Therein lies the problem. Skip, I can't discipline you if I know I'm going to get yelled at by my superior. And that's what happened. See, Jimmy didn't have to answer to anybody. And you know that. That's how it was in Denver with Mike. We knew Mike was the end-all, be-all. Mr. Bolin turned it over to him. He was the general manager. He was the head coach. You came the time that Mike said. You got off when Mike said it. We understood that. But Jerry didn't want that. Jerry wanted to have a voice. And in the process of having a voice, his voice started overshadowing the head coach's voice that should be the voice that's emanating in the locker room. So this is Jerry's fault that there was no accountability. There was just Jerry's fault that the coach can't get on the players like he should because Jerry no longer wanted Jimmy to have that kind of control. I want in. Let me tag me in. Tag me in. I want to say something. Jimmy's like, no. Only the head coach addressed the team. Jerry wasn't addressing no team like he doing now. He in the locker room. He leading the prayer. He say, good job, guys, at the end of the day. Okay, there were occasions that Mr. Bolin, there were occasions that Art Modell might say something, but that was few and far between. Not every game. Therein lies your problem, Skip Bayless. The question I have for you, is he going to let Mike McCarthy coach and let Mike run the show, or is he want to overshadow, or does he want to be the face of the Cowboys? Because if he does, you're going to be in the same situation that you've been in since Jimmy left.
I don't have an answer to that. I like what I've seen so far. I'm waiting to see what I see when the real games start. Okay. You're probably right. I just think by nature, Mike McCarthy is a little tougher, mentally sort of emotionally tougher. He's more of a driving football coach than Jason Garrett was. Jason was pure players coach. Jason was a decent player, a backup quarterback who had a couple of big moments, one against your brother's team on Thanksgiving Day, the Packers, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Jason was pretty good. Jason knew the ropes. He knew how to do it. He knew how to play. He knows how to deal with football players to a fault. He was too nice a guy. I don't think Mike McCarthy will get as close to the players. So I'm hoping there'll be a little bit of new fear factor, maybe from Mike Nolan on the defensive side, a little bit of new urgency created. But Shannon, in the end, I look at the numbers that got put up by the offense last year, just quickly for the record, they were number one in total offense, number two in passing offense, number two in third down offense, number two in explosive pass plays and in explosive plays, period. And they went 8-8. They did too many bad things. They didn't take the ball away enough. They dropped way too many passes. And Dak missed too many throws by his lofty standards that would have changed or won games. So something was missing psychologically. And it's the culture that Jason created. And to your point, and I give you this, ultimately it's Jerry's fault because he stuck with Jason Garrett to a fault. So in the end, they need to have a new sheriff. They have to have a new upgraded culture. I'm hoping that a guy like CeeDee Lamb will walk in the door and say, hell with all this. I'm going out there to play football. And if you guys want to come along, join me. That's what I hope happens.
Well, Skip, to be honest with you, sometimes drops are contagious because I've been in games in two different locations, in Denver and in Baltimore, and one guy dropped the ball on first down and another guy dropped the ball on second down and another guy dropped the ball on third down. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? And then I've seen situations where one guy make a tough catch and then for the rest of the game, everybody's making acrobatic catches. So maybe that happened. But I still believe that concentration plays the biggest factor in catching as opposed to coaching.
Speaking of receivers and, you know, some expectations, Tom Brady's receivers were just named the best duo in the league. We'll give you all the details and talk a little bit more about Tom and his guys. Tom Brady is going to like his new receiving group. According to Bleacher Report, the Buccaneers, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, are the top receiving duo in the NFL. Shannon, how much better will they make Brady than he was last season?
Well, I expect them to help Tom a lot, Skip. They can make their big body guys. They can make tough, contested catches where he had small receivers and he had to fit it in. Tom doesn't have to be perfect now, and I think that helps a lot. Skip, as we get older, we need more help. It's just as simple as that. And that doesn't take away from Tom's greatness or what he's accomplished in the past. But as we get older and we are still in sports, we need more help. And so I think these guys will definitely, they will help Tom more than Tom will help them. See, this notion that, you know, for all the other receivers, Tom Brady, people want you to believe that Tom Brady made Randy Moss. Randy Moss was a made man before he set one foot in New England. He was the freak. He was mossing people long before Tom Brady even got into the NFL. You know that. I know that. And we might not ever see a receiver that have 17 touchdown receptions in a rookie season. That's what Randy Moss put up in a rookie season. So I think Godwin and Mike Evans and all these guys, Skip, the tight ends crew with Gronk and Braid and O.J. Howard, they will help huge for Tom. Because Tom now does not have to be perfect. He's not throwing to 5'8", 5'9", 6-foot receivers. Those guys are 6'5", 6'2", 6'6", that can make tough, huge catch radius and will help Tom Brady immensely. This is what Tom needed. Great weather, great receiving core. This should help him a lot.
By the way, nobody ever said that Tom Brady made Randy Moss. Obviously,
yeah,
you're right. Randy was all the way a made man in Minnesota. He had one bad year where he basically quit on the Oakland Raiders, which is how Bill Belichick was able to steal him. But Randy and Tom made each other. They made each other record setters in 2007.
Correct.
So let's stop it with that notion, because nobody started that narrative except you to make it an anti-Brady narrative. And it's bogus and phony, and you know it. Okay, now, Tom Brady just went from the worst receiving core and a below-average offensive line in New England to an embarrassment of riches in Tampa. Nobody in the history of quarterbacking has spread the wealth better than Tom Brady. Nobody can get more receivers involved in any single one game than Tom Brady has, where he'll get 9 or 10 receivers involved. Now he has 9 or 10 worth involving, worthy of being a few catches, 5, 6, 7 catches in any one game. And he will do just that. So what I loved about the story we're referring to is, because the Bucs went 7-9 last year, Shannon, I lost touch with just how great Mike Evans and Chris Godwin were and have been. Do you realize, speaking of Randy Moss, only one other receiver in the history of this league in his first 5 years in the league has gone over 1,000 yards receiving? That's Mike Evans. He tied Randy Moss at 5 last year. If he goes to 6 this year, which he's got a good shot at doing now that he's got the GOAT thrown to him, that would make him the all-timer with 6 straight right out of the gate, 1,000-yard receiving seasons. And then if you look at Chris Godwin's numbers, you look hard at his numbers last year, he was the most productive receiver per play, per target in the NFL. I mean, I look at Michael Thomas's numbers. Yeah, he caught 149 balls, but he got 185 thrown to him. Quietly in Tampa, a guy made the Pro Bowl named Chris Godwin, and he caught only 86 balls, but on only 121 targets. So Michael Thomas got 185. Chris Godwin got 64 fewer passes thrown to him, yet he wound up 3rd in the league in yards caught passing, you know, just in overall passing yards, receiving yards, was Chris Godwin with 1,333. That's because he averaged 15.5 a catch to Michael Thomas's 11.6. Wow, that's 4 yards a catch more for the unknown, unsung Chris Godwin in Tampa. So all of a sudden, you got those two guys doing not good things, but great things on the outside. I told you, you've got little Scotty Miller, who's just a rookie out of Bowling Green last year. He caught 13 balls. Watch, that will triple this year because he has supreme short area quickness. He'll be the Edelman Amendola out of the slot. Then you add Gronk to O.J. Howard, who will come out of the doghouse thanks to Tom Brady, and Cameron Brate, who's a great red zone target. And who's the best screen pass thrower in pro football? It's Tom Brady. So all of a sudden, wait a second. Watch Ronald Jones start catching screens. But watch my little big man out of Vanderbilt, Keyshawn Vaughn, stole him in the 3rd round of this draft. Watch Keyshawn Vaughn catch screen passes from Tom Brady. Watch him turn into James White. Weapons everywhere. And watch Tom Brady turn back into Tom Brady. Watch Shannon Sharp every Monday on Undisputed, 9:30 Eastern. Watch the horror on his face as he has to eat a whole nother big plate of fried crow thanks to Tampa Bay Tom Brady.
Can I ask you a question, Skip? When Chris Godwin, who finished 3rd in receiving yards on such few catches, averaged over 13 yards a catch, what does that mean? He's catching a lot of what? In order for him to have that high receiving average, what must Tom Brady be willing to do? Look down the barrel, stand there and take a few of them right to the chops. Is he going to be able to do that? Is he going to be willing? We saw over the last couple of years him starting to flinch more. They mentioned in Pro Football Focus, they mentioned it in the other publications, that he was starting to flinch, Skip. You won't mention that. But I think we need to give Jameis more credit. Jameis is a little more athletic than we give him credit for. Now, he reminds you, I think it was perfect situation, Skip, because his offensive coordinator, that's who he reminded me of, Byron Leftwich. They had the same kind of mobility, had kind of like the same extended throwing motion, but Jameis could get out of harm's way and throw the ball over people's head. So we didn't give him nearly enough credit for doing that. The question is, it remains, is Tom Brady willing and able to take a few of those big shots again? That is the question, Skip. He has the talent that can make those plays. More talent than he's had in a very, very long time. I can see that. But the question is he willing to take those shots to stand in there and to push the ball down the field?
The answer is no, because he will not have to. He will get rid of the ball much quicker than Jameis did. I remind you, Jameis turned the ball over 35 times last year. That's 12 more times than any other quarterback in the league. Tom Brady turned it over a grand total of 9 times for a pretty sorry New England offense featuring no supporting cast and a below average offensive line. 35 to 9? You don't think, wait a second.
Coach Belichick said, we could have got better play out of my quarterback. We might have had a number one seed. That's what Coach Belichick was thinking. You thinking about his sorry supporting cast. Coach Belichick said, what about my sorry lead actor? That what Coach Belichick said. That what he say. I don't know. That what he say, though.
Well, what I say is, did you notice who the Bucs traded up for and nabbed or stole at number 13 in the first round?
Tristan Wirfs
out of Iowa. Woo!
Yeah.
Oh, wait a second. So he plugs right in at right tackle, and all of a sudden you shore up the offensive line. It's going to be a little better than what he had to work with and hide behind last year in New England. You are in big trouble, my friend.
But, Skip, that's like, if you buy a big house, if you're not entertaining, if you buy a 30,000 square foot house and you're not entertaining, you lose the value really of the house. Why would somebody, just two people that don't entertain, need a house that size? If Tom Brady is not going to take advantage of what he has with Evans and Godwin, which is can push the ball down the field, that can make tough contested catches down the field, what's the benefit of him dinking and dunking like he did in New England?
When he has it, he will throw it. Just watch and weep. No mercy.